Hi, my name is Richard and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Richard.
Thank you for asking me to speak tonight. It's a great privilege to be able to speak at any AA meeting because the bottom line is AA saved my life. And when I'm asked to do service, I do it. And they told me very early on in AA, my basic job was to suit up and show up and do the next right thing. And so I'm glad I got to speak here tonight. You know, I always get a little bit nervous before I speak, and that's kind of funny because I really enjoy the sound of my own voice, you know. But I do. I try to remember that I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. I'm just merely here to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. As to the measure of belief or the ability to change another human being or thought, when I first came to AA, I thought, you know, that's exactly what I was doing. I was going to come to AA and I was going to help you. It was my big job in AA when I first came, was helping you. And as a matter of fact, I always used to say to myself when I first came to meetings, you know, if I don't get to the meeting today and share what I consider to be the share of shares, somebody's going to drink. Well, what I didn't realize is that somebody was me. And very kindly, you guys kind of put up with my craziness. And I would tell people with 15 years of sobriety what Bill W. really meant when he wrote Bill's story. And they would tell me, that's great, Rich. Are you coming to a meeting tomorrow? And I'd say, yeah, well, I'm not here, you know. And thus started the deflationary experience of Richard Brenton in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I only like to talk about as it relates to the practical application of some of the spiritual tools that were laid at my feet to help me to become a better person. So if I talk about things in my past, which I'm going to in a second, it's only because at the end I found a solution. A simple set of spiritual tools that I use to help me get free from these problems. And the problems were like my resentments and the problems, you know, selfishness, my self-centeredness, and my immaturity. Although when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never believed those things were any problem for me at all. My father was an alcoholic who killed himself when I was 7. He drove into a tree and was instantly decapitated. But the thing was, he was such an abusive fellow, and I had seen so much violence and crap when I was a kid. So here I am, I'm like 7 years old, I'm hearing, hey, your father's dead, and I'm thinking to myself, good. What a freaking relief. Because I don't have to hear the shit anymore. I don't have to hear the fighting. I don't have to be in the situation of violence, seeing it happen to others, having it happen to me. And I just remember I felt a sense of relief. Good. He's dead. And I didn't think of fraction at all. But I do remember spending a great deal of my childhood, I was the perfect child. Never spoke out. Always just kept my head in that television and kept my mouth shut. I didn't realize it was because I was scared shit. I'm sorry, can I say that word? I don't want to breach etiquette of AA, but that's basically what the problem was. But I didn't understand that. You see, I just didn't understand that. To me, it was something else. By the time I got to 12 years old, I told myself, I believe, the first alcoholic lie that I ever told myself, and I remember I was drinking a little alcohol by a swing, and I said to myself, and I was just popping that, you know, 16-ounce can of Miller High Life, whatever, you know, the sound. And I remember saying to myself really clear, this is my life, and I can do what I want. And I don't care, you know, this is not hurting anybody at all. This is my choice and I'm I think I was like about 13 years old when I made that decision. And of course I experienced immediately a sense of ease and comfort because all of a sudden I could drop this tension, this anxiety that I had no idea where it was coming from off of my shoulders. And I told myself many other lies since then. Now, I have children now. I have children I got all kinds of kids. I got ADHD, I got Tourette's, I got everything. But I'm so blessed. It's unbelievable. But right now, my kid is 12 years old. And if 1 year from now, his best solution for living life is to drink, it's going to break my freaking heart. Not that I feel that I could control other people's beings, but just that I, in some way, you know what I mean? Like, for me to think that at that age, if that was an acceptable solution, it didn't even occur to me that I was hurting other people, how my mother felt, how anybody who cared about me in my life felt. It was all about me. It was all about the selfishness of me, you know? And it just kept escalating like that. You know, I would keep drinking, and there is dry goods in my story. And I think dry goods left AA, who just had a pure alcoholic story. The rooms would literally be empty. But I won't go into that much, except to say that I was a delusional thinker, and like many people, I chose many exits from the reality, which I like to call my mind. Some people take a train, some people take a boat, but we all leave and end up in our own personal little hells. You know, so I don't make a distinction of how one came and one didn't. I got sober when I was 44. I'm sober now about 7.5 years. And so you do the math. I started this at 13. I got sober at 44. I'm talking, I got 31 years of solid delusional thinking going on in my mind. Things like, it was so funny, this morning I'm at my big book study talking about the four-step inventory and how you have to take ownership of the reality and kind of go to that column where it says, you know, what role did I play in this, you know? And I walk in and my young friend here is telling the same story. My company sent me all over the United States to do some crap for them. Oh, I said it again. And I've been to AA all over, Arizona, Mexico, you name it. It's beautiful. Story. It's all the same story. And that's why I always try to make AA, because I want to make it part of my home. It's part of my, it's my Super Bowl. So, this is kind of like what it was like, you know, and I would get my, you know, I would be arrested, and I would get beatings, and I would do things to people, I would take advantage of people who were what I would call, like, gullible. Now I'm realizing I had suffered from mental illness, but I really wasn't caring about that. I was just caring about getting what I wanted, satisfying my needs, getting the money, getting everything I needed to make my reality happen. I was like that guy from the Truman Show. I actually thought that when I went to sleep, you guys just disappeared. You were just parts, bit part players in the reality, which was my life. And so it was really bad. I was not thinking of anybody. You know? And I always said to God, oh God, help me, you know, give me a good job, give me a good home, give me a car, give me this, give me that, give me this. And I got all of those things. But I still was like empty. I just was empty. Walking around all concerned about how you're looking out here. And you empty. And I didn't understand why. At a certain point, the sense of ease and comfort that I got from taking that first drink, that ally that supposedly made me the social lubricant that supposedly helped me get by day to day, turned against me. And it wasn't any longer it wasn't a luxury. It was a thing for me to drink. For me to use. It was a maintenance thing. If I didn't, I was going to be sick. And I knew this. But once again, for my whole life, and I think towards the end, about the last 5 or 8 years of my fiasco, which I call my alcoholism, that I was walking around with the first half of the first step. I absolutely knew I had this. But I absolutely kept trying to manage it. You know, it says in the first step, right? The minute we're alcoholic and our lives are unmanageable, well, I can admit I was an alcoholic. But I'll manage it this time. No matter what happened last night, tonight's going to be different. Tonight, I'll drink like a normal human being. Tonight, I won't get into fights. Tonight, I won't rob anybody, and I won't be robbed. So what happened? Something about my family. I told a little bit about the abusive nature of the family and the dynamic and all this stuff. There was another thing I forgot to tell you about, that I was raised on public assistance. And I had 3 brothers and 1 sister. And man, we were a mean, grunge bunch of people. I don't know if you ever played this game up in Canada, but in New York we used to play a game called the Dozens. And the Dozens were about like making somebody humiliate them within 12 sentences. We just used to rank on each other like that. I mean, really pop on each other. And we were like, man, we had honed this skill like unbelievable. And I could get my sister or my brother to, you know, cry or try to beat the crap out of me. And I got it down to about 2 or 3 sentences. They say no one can push your buttons like your family because your family helped install your buttons. And I believe that that's true. So the only reason why I say that is because it's part of what happened. What happened was I was at a company office party, and I was just hanging out. And I was pontificating, very much like I'm doing now. But I was pontificating about the nature of the global suffering and what absolutely had to be done to cure it, and, you know, going off, and I was drunk, and but, you know, I was delusional, so I thought it all was just wonderful. And this woman came behind me, and I was sitting just like I'm sitting here, and she whacked me right on the head, just a, bam, like that, on my head. Now, I was like, what is up? How dare this woman whack me on the head like this? But I was cool. I turned around to her, just like I'm turning around to you, and I said to her, if you do that again, I'm going to make you feel like 2 cents. Right? And I was stone cold, meant it. And that woman, bam, hit me again right on the top of the head. Then all that stuff, all that poison, all that anger, all that ability to make someone suffer with words, came out. I didn't know where it came out. It was like, all of a sudden, I was like, you know, 8 years old again. And we were like ranking each other out. And I had this girl like here. And man, I knew. I was looking at her and she was on the verge of crying. And I knew I had just gotten, I was all I had to do was like that. It was all. But I quickly realized where I was at the company office party, and if anybody ever saw me behaving like that or making someone feel like that, they would most certainly know who I was. I couldn't stay at a job like that. They would have fired me instantly. So I did what every self-respecting alcoholic does. I got out of there fast, and I went to a real Irish bar. One of those bars that's dark and smoky where you could do some real serious collateral damage and nobody will do anything. Well, so there I am. I'm drinking my full head off. I mean, I am really pounding them down now because I'm trying to forget this thing that I did. Because even I was shocked at the venom, the evilness of the whole thing. And I remember getting so, so drunk, I could barely move. And the bartender telling me, look, buddy, go home. This is it. You know, what are you doing here? And I said to him, whatever. And, you know, and I remember sitting in one of these, like a nook and there was a few people out buying drinks for everybody, and of course the gregarious alcoholic that's buying drinks for everybody gets put up, you can do a lot of crap and everyone puts up with your behavior. And I remember leaning back like this. But before I leaned back, I looked at the clock and I saw it was like 3:45. And I'm leaning back and I remember opening my eyes and I looked and it was like 10 minutes had passed. But something about me, something washed over me that said, I better get out of there quick. Because I knew I was like just blindly drunk. So I walked out of the bar and I looked up the street, and this is in Manhattan in New York, and this was my kind of God's little Polaroid for Rich. And I looked up and I realized just for a second, might have only lasted 10, maybe 15 seconds, I was having a lucid blackout where I didn't know where I was, I didn't know who I was, and I was right there, but I was aware that I didn't know these things. And I felt for the first time like I was losing my mind. And the feeling just washed over me. I felt like a kid could walk up to me and kill me right there. I was powerless. I was just powerless. And like I said, it only lasted about 10 seconds. And I looked up and I saw a yellow taxi cab, and I don't know if you know Manhattan, but it's the only place you can see a yellow taxi cab. So I instantly made the deduction that if that is a yellow taxi cab, that I was in Manhattan. And I got into that yellow taxi cab and I paid that guy $65 to take me home. And I woke up and I was never the same again. Just wasn't. Because for the first time in my life, I had realized that everything that I was, my whole life, was like a candle. And it was fragile. And it was not something that I could just arbitrarily play with and expect that nothing would ever happen. God didn't blow my candle out, man. God just breathed on it a little bit. Just a little flicker to remind me, man, Rich, this is no joke. And I knew right then I was heading for the waterfall. I'm like, before that moment happened, I was just gaily pedaling for the waterfall. When I saw that, when I got that little moment of clarity, instead of saying, like I've heard other people tell me, they said, oh, geez, I had shit like that happened to me too. I went and drank the next day. Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. For me, it was enough. And I started rowing like crazy to the shore. And I realized, I said, all my life I had asked God for this, that, and the other thing, and I had gotten it. I did have a lovely wife, I had lovely kids, I had a nice home, a good job, and all this stuff in one hand. And I had alcohol and my dry goods in the other. And I was consistently choosing the alcohol. And if that isn't a definition of insanity, I don't know what is. I mean, I always used to say to myself that I loved myself. Even in my highest use of alcohol, I would always say, well, I love myself. But yet, I never was doing anything consistent with somebody who actually loved themselves. People who love themselves don't kill themselves. Right? That's basically what I've come to understand now. But because I was a delusional thinking alcoholic, I couldn't put that connection together. And then I said to myself, look, I'm going to go for this program with all the desperation that a drowning man reaches for a freaking life preserver. And I'm going to become willing to listen like only the dying can. And all of a sudden, it started changing around for me. I found somebody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who was happier than they had any right to be. And I turned around and I said, what do you do? That's what I'm going to do, whatever that is. And they told me, I do the steps. And I said, what the hell? What's the steps? I don't know what the steps. What's that thing on the wall? And for a while, I thought the steps were like a Chinese menu, you know. I'll take some of step one, a little of step seven. I definitely ain't going to touch step four. But I had to get to that point where I would accept it. See, my blessing in Alcoholics Anonymous is not that I am changed, although I am changed. My blessing is that I have the ability to understand the changes that need to take place, that when these things start to crop up again, I can become a better person, because now I'm aware. See, Alcoholics Anonymous made me an educated consumer. You know, now I can't go out. If I go out drinking now, I can't say I was victimized by the notion of alcohol, because I became an educated consumer. If I go out now, baby, you call me not a victim, you call me a volunteer. You know? And people say, well, I drink because I'm depressed. I drink because my wife left me. I drink because of this. I drink because of that. Hey, the bottom line is, I believe this book when it says, we drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. That's it. I like to get hot. There's a million freaking reasons that I invent to do it. But if the push comes to shove, I basically just want to get high. So I know that now. I know a lot of things now that I didn't know. You don't know how sick you are until you get sober. You really don't. And I came to the rooms of alcoholics, I think I only had one character defect drinking. If I can stop that, boom, look, I'm a real nice guy. I have resentments. I don't have any of those, you know. Jesus, I was a ball of resentment, okay? I had such anger in me, you know. And in AA, they taught me, look, you know, when you're angry, you're really afraid. That's what it really is. And the anger is the outward covering up of the fear of looking at something about you that you don't want to see. And I didn't want to hear that. No way. No. So I got through my steps and I started doing my inventory and I got to the point, now this is where I have to pull my dad back in. Because here's a resentment that you would say, Jesus, look, you know, violent father, brutal household, guy kills himself with alcohol. I ain't even telling you some of the crap I saw. But you guys get the picture. Because, you know, we all come with the same last name, alcoholic. And so how do I own this? How is this my fault? You know what? And I started getting to the point where I realized, you know what, that for right now, I said, let it sit for a while and start using your tools. What are your tools? My tools are prayer and meditation. Those are two of the tools in my spiritual toolbox, the thing that I'm instructed. See, my job in AA is this simple. Lay the set of spiritual tools at the feet of the newcomer. Whether you choose to use them or not, brother, that's your call. I do my job. There they are. Boom. One of them's prayer. The other's meditation. Want to use it? Great. Let me tell you something positive that happened with meditation with me. I was meditating and praying. And when I was an alcoholic, I had kids that were 3 and 4 years old, and I used to, like right now, let's say I say something that you don't like, and we're going to have a little argument over it, right? So I'll say, well, I don't like freaking football, and you'll say, well, I like football, and I'll pause, and I'll listen to your rebuttal, and then I'll give another one. And then I'll pause and I'll listen. You know, I could have a debate, a very heated discussion with somebody now, but I'll pause and actually listen to the other person. See, when I say you don't know how sick you are till you get sober, I used to think I was having these debates with my wife. But actually, I was alcoholically raging at her. I wasn't listening to what she had to say. I was blowing her a new set of eardrums. But I didn't know that. Because I didn't know how sick I was until I got sober. And this came to me in my meditation. And it also came to me, too, that I used to think that I, you know, was a good father and I was a stern father, but I was a good father with my children and I directed them accordingly and all this stuff, and then I realized I wasn't doing that at all. I was alcoholically raging at my kids. And how I came to realize this was through my meditations, I saw my kids' faces looking up at me. And I saw me looking up at my father. And it just blew my mind. It changed me. It gentled my condition. And I realized that my father wasn't a bad person. He was an alcoholic that could not recover. And that maybe, just maybe, I had to see all those things I had to see. So when I got to that point, I could change. I could change. Like that. He became from this villain, nightmare creature who destroyed my adolescence to like my heroic redeemer. He was the guy who died so that I didn't have to die. He was the guy who died so that my kids wouldn't have to have the shit happen to them again. Because alcoholism is like a chain. It's like a chain that follows families around. I come from 5 generations of alcoholics. It's not like, you know, I just decided to drink. And man, I know my father was abused. I know it. And I know his father was an alcoholic, and his father got his ass wailed a lot too. It's a cycle. It's a circle that keeps going around and around. And somehow, it's got to break. And the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is it put me in a point where I could see, I don't have to live like that. I don't have to put people through that. Alcoholics Anonymous has been a wonderful gift in my life because it's helped me to become the father that I always wanted to be. You know, the husband that my wife deserves, and the friend. I can be a friend now because I understand that you know, having a friend is being a friend. And I suit up and I show up and I do the next right thing. I don't concern myself so much, you know, with what affects other people. I don't know what your journey is. I'll just tell you, this is what happened to me. I think there's magic in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing less than pure magic. But I also believe that you've got to believe in magic for the magic to work. And I know because my home group is, I met at 7 o'clock this morning with a bunch of alcoholics in Union, New Jersey. And they are happy, joyous, and free people now because they did certain steps. You know, if I just got into Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't do any of this and just said, you know what, it really is just about not drinking and going to meet for me, well, what it really would have been is that I would have never looked at me. I would have never seen any of this. Why wouldn't I? Sure, it's painful. Sure, it's a process you go through. But man, isn't it like the pain of life that makes us stronger people? It's not everything is so easy, pat on the ass, okay, you're sober. You know, it's like, come on. When I was out there drinking, I wanted the very best of everything. And I come in here and I'll settle for just kind of getting sober. No. I want to be happy, joyous, and free person. I want that. I don't know how long I've been speaking. I could speak for hours, believe me. But because I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful that when I came in and I was crazy, you guys kind of like gave me a safe place to sit for a while and go through it. And I remember when I first got sober, before I got sober, I went to my first meeting, and I came home, and I opened up the refrigerator, and I took out a beer, popped that beer, and I said, "Honey, I've been to my first AA meeting." She goes, "Yeah." I said, "I got some good news, and I got some bad news." What's the bad news? "Oh, I'm an alcoholic." What's the good news? "I ain't that bad." You know what I mean? Because I would go to the meetings, and I would look at you and say, "Well, you're worse than I, and I'm not there yet, and I didn't kill anyone, and I'm not a pedophile, and I ain't this, and I ain't all kind of shit." Because I would always try to separate you from me. I wasn't trying to identify with people. I was trying to judge them. Because then I could separate you from me. I could say, "Well, I'm not that bad." And until I could get to that point where I could accept that I was an alcoholic, it was hard. And I'll end by one last little analogy. In Alcoholics Anonymous, my life was like a glass of dirty water. And when I first came in, you couldn't see through the water. But in order to get some type of help, because the water was everything I believed, and you can't fill a glass that's already full to the brim. So I had to get to the point where I kind of let a little of that water out. And I let a little of that water out, and then my sponsor, God bless sponsors, pushed in a little clean water. And it was a process like that, you know, a little bit, let go of a little bit, put in a little bit, you know. And when I think about water, I think, you know, you hear the old expression, the glass is half empty, the glass is half full. It's the way you look at life. That's your perspective. You know, before I got sober, I looked at the glass, it was always half empty. It was always about what I didn't have in life, what I didn't have. Now, I look at the glass, and I say, the glass is half full. It's about everything I do have that I'm not being grateful for. That's the thing I got to focus on. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm a delusional thinker, right, I think the glass is half full. But I know if I keep coming back, I'm going to realize that glass is really overflowing. I just can't see it because I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for letting me share.